personal brands are becoming the hub for content, the hub for marketing. The more you step out of your comfort zone, the more risks you take. It's like anything in life, sets and reps. There are ways to hack the system. Like for me, contrast therapy, joining run clubs, joining triathlon clubs, joining CrossFit gyms. I was bumping shoulders with other risk takers. In order to succeed, you want to be known for something.
How we can elevate the quality of our personal brands.
Picking a theme and picking an emotion that you want to run with, and what is just an authentic extension of you. I think that's super important. In order to build a business around it, you need to figure out what type of value do you want to provide and who is paying for that value.
How do you position yourself to succeed?
You need to instantly captivate someone's interest because so many people are creating content. If you can do a good job of getting people into the app and keeping people in the app, then Instagram is going to favor that content.
This dude was way ahead of the trend when it came to setting the standard around creating high quality content, brand building, authenticity, and so much more. In fact, he was also on the first rendition of this podcast, Homies at Home, the first, I believe it was 10 episodes, and now we're over 100 into Inside the Inspire. We've had so many premier guests, but at this stage, it's only appropriate to welcome back the legend himself, the angel investor, endurance athlete, multiple time Kona Ironman, and oh so much more, Mr. Eric Hinman. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me, Jonathan. Appreciate the kind intro.
Hey, man, at this point, you know it's all fact. Like, when you put enough work in.
Yeah, I mean, lately it's been enough play, but luckily play is blended in with work for me. So
I feel like that's always kind of been the case. Well, I guess not, right? We've kind of talked about in the past thriving chapter versus surviving chapter, and maybe that's an opportune place to start. What was that like, your surviving chapter relative to your thriving chapter now?
Yeah. So, I mean, early 20s for me was going door to door, selling insurance to campgrounds and marinas, wearing a suit and tie, you know, sitting all the time, being indoors, very much just like chasing opportunity. And, you know, I'm grateful that my father gave me that opportunity. He managed a small insurance company in upstate New York. And, you know, I watched him lead people growing up and watched him growing a company. So I knew I always wanted to do that. And he gave me an opportunity where I could create residual income and I could build an asset. So, you know, I always tell young people first getting into, you know, their first career that it may not be the thing that you want to do for the rest of your life, but at least try and pick something where you're not just trading time for money. You're building some kind of asset, you're building residual income, or, you know, you're building this unique skill that you can eventually use to go off and do something else. And I mean, what I would say that unique skill is now is building a personal brand. I think many of us are aware that personal brands are becoming more and more valuable because personal brands are becoming the hub for content, the hub for marketing. But yeah, I mean, that chapter of my life was very different than the chapter of my life now. I mean, I'm wearing a tank top. I just got done mountain biking and I just posted a reel for Ice Barrel that, you know, is some of my work for the day. You know, I had probably six other calls today in a podcast, but every single one of them was with people that I want to converse with, people in the wellness space, people building wellness companies, people raising money for wellness brands, other podcasters. So I'm so fortunate that, you know, now my whole life is built around relationships instead of transactions. And I feel like most of my 20s were transactions. You know, I was just trying to make a buck. I was trying to sell stuff. And, you know, they were good products. I was selling a good insurance product, but it was very transactionary instead of, you know, now they're friendships more so than business relationships that I have with everyone I work with.
There's so much to unpack there where what I appreciate about you is that you, right off the bat, you give people so much to think about, where maybe someone right now could step back and say, where am I being transactional in my life versus more intentional? And when it came to leading a more purposeful, intentional life, I discovered your content while I was in law school. And we got the chance to connect in person after I had already passed the bar and I was about to start at the DA's office. And it was a very opportune time. Went out to Denver for the first time, flew out myself, and you recommended Heist to check out. You recommended all these different places that I should go see. And I was like, I don't know. I've never really gone like hiking alone. I'd done it in the military, but it wasn't really my thing. And seeing how you went about designing your life, it was extremely motivational because you start to realize what it means to be in the rat race and on the hamster wheel. And you're a prime example of what it means to step out of that. What gave you the courage to make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, there was no one moment where I just ripped the Band-Aid off. You know, again, I had built this business that was providing me with a residual income that allowed me to start taking some risks. And, you know, my first risk outside of the insurance business was starting a software company. I partnered with a friend in upstate New York, and we started building mobile applications that we wanted for ourselves that helped us locate where all of the cool restaurants were in New York City and all of the cool shoe shops and hotels. And we started scaling that to other cities around the same time that Yelp was launching and Foursquare was launching. And, you know, we realized that we didn't build it nearly as scalable as they had built it. But I mean, that was my first side hustle. And that was my first time like really doing a passion project and not kind of treating work and play separately. And then I got into Ironmans and CrossFit type workouts in 2010. And in 2013, I partnered with some friends and we opened a CrossFit gym in upstate New York. And, you know, that was my first big risk of like putting a bunch of money into something and creating this brick and mortar space and, you know, fingers crossed that people would come and they would like what we created. And then through that, I met my business partner in a bunch of restaurants that I opened in upstate New York as well. Fast casual restaurants, reminiscent of the types of places I was going to when I was in LA and New York City, hip hop music playing, really cool artwork, really vibey. And good food, you know, single ingredient foods. Like at that time, I was really into bowls. I had, you know, a bowl for lunch and a bowl for dinner of meat and vegetables and good sauces. So that's what we created at that restaurant. The more you step out of your comfort zone, the more risks you take. It's like anything in life, sets and reps. The more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to become doing it. And, you know, the first time I ever knocked on someone's door for insurance, like I was sweating profusely. I was scared shitless. Like I didn't want to hear no. I didn't want that to deflate my ego. And, you know, it took 6 months of doing that in order to start feeling comfortable of someone saying, no, like, I don't want to talk to you right now. I don't need insurance. And I was just like, okay, it's not me. It's you. You don't need insurance. I get it. I'll go to the next one. But yeah, I mean, I feel like you take things personally early on when you're selling things. And you also take things personally when you fail at something. But, you know, you have to realize, and the more people I've met through the years, like everyone has failures. Failures are what teach people, you know, what not to do again. And over time, you start to build these skills and this network. So failing is less of a risk. You know, you kind of know the formula if you're staying in your lane and you're just, you know, building a new mousetrap. But yeah, ultimately, it's, you know, have a side hustle, do something that's a hobby. You know, I would never tell someone to quit their job if they have a family and mortgage and kids. But, you know, there are ways to just kind of side hustle. And there are ways to hack the system. Like, for me, contrast therapy, joining run clubs, joining triathlon clubs, joining CrossFit gyms, those were hacks to the system where I was bumping shoulders with other risk takers and people that I wanted to interact with. We were bonding over discomfort and, you know, you can form friendships and relationships with people really fast by doing those things. So I feel like that was my hack of, you know, building this incredible network of people and friends around me is just going places where chance encounters with like-minded people can happen and know that, you know, you're going to bond with people faster if you're doing something uncomfortable together. So a lot of that for me now is inviting people over to the house every single night to do contrast therapy. There's people in my sauna right now, you know, doing contrast therapy. And we have, you know, 5 to 10 people over every single night. And, you know, that's how I build my network now. And, you know, that's where I'm able to easily meet new people.
Community is definitely a valuable lesson that I've learned from you as well. And as someone who didn't embrace the concept as much just because you spend so much time in school and earning degrees, working in the public sector, now in the private sector, even in New York. Only recently this year did I really tap into the power of community and start to fully understand what it is. There's a difference between community and friends, I've come to find, mm-hmm. and acquaintances. In community, there's a like-mindedness that people are driven by the same North Star, same purpose. And that is pretty eye-opening to me. I joined a run club, Zach Pergrobe's run club. We got connected through a mutual friend, and he ends up coming on the podcast. I ran into Dan Churchill again. He ends up coming on the podcast, met another friend, who also a fantastic human. And as a result of this run club, I'm running the fastest miles on long runs that I've ever run in my entire life. And it's mm-hmm. all like sub sevens, like, and I'm like over 190 at this point. So like for me, I'm pretty happy about that. As a marathon or endurance athlete yourself, I know that there's a different scale for your skill set, obviously. But at this stage, it's just so empowering to see how like-minded people can force you to push yourself. And discomfort is a regular element of your schedule. And I mentioned it at the top, chasing perfect days. Please elaborate on the concept for those who are unfamiliar.
Yeah. So 15 years ago, when I first got into Ironman, I started just feeling so much more fulfilled from the long runs I was going on, the people I was meeting, progressing in triathlon, progressing in biking and swimming, learning new skills. And, you know, obviously exercise was a component of that endorphin rush that I would get post-exercise. But also, like, I was completely present in what I was doing during those activities. I was in nature, heart rate elevated, you know, not wishing I was anywhere else, not wishing I was doing anything else. I started to associate exercise with well-being as opposed to exercise to the way you look physically, which, you know, previous to triathlon, that's what I associated it with. It was, you know, I want to look good on spring break in college. That's what exercise was to me in college. So, you know, that was the first time I associated it with emotional and mental well-being. So the perfect day concept came when I realized that I didn't want to chase money anymore. I was doing everything previous to the triathlon years for the public perception of success. I wanted to have the nice condo. I wanted to have the BMW. I wanted the nice watches. And you know, I was dressing in fancy suits and pocket squares and cufflinks. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, there was a quick dopamine hit when I bought that fancy item, but then it went away. It wasn't fulfilling by any means. Where the triathlon years, they were so fulfilling. My training sessions, the races, the conversations, the people, all of it was so fulfilling. So I started making these lists of all of the activities I was doing where I was completely present, all of the conversations, all of the people, all of the environments where I was just completely in the moment. I felt like I was getting value and giving value. And then I made another list where I didn't feel aligned, where they were conversations that just sucked energy out of me. And, you know, they were late nights and meaningless conversations I was having with people and, you know, sitting in board meetings, doodling, wishing I was somewhere else because I was adding no value. I was just on this board because I wanted to put it on my resume to look important. So I started phasing out of all of those things. And as I got more into all of these flow state present activities and conversations and environments like the mountains here in Colorado, I started to realize like I can be in flow pretty much all day if I time block my days around things that bring me presence. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, building businesses and having conversations with people where I feel like I'm giving value and getting value. It's not just exercise all day, although on Instagram it might be perceived as that. But, you know, I wrote out these buckets of this is how I want to spend my day and this is how I want to time block it. And this is the order in which I want to do it, where I'm going to show up as the best version of myself. So hitting my morning workout is super important for me because I know after that I'm going to be energized. I'm going to have tons of mental clarity and I'm going to be able to give back. I'm going to have amazing conversations with people if I hit that morning workout. If I don't, my mind isn't going to be as sharp. So I try and schedule these different things that I know will help build the perfect day throughout the day. And then I've also figured out how to monetize a portion of it by, you know, investing in brands, raising money for brands, creating content for brands, building brand ambassador programs. And all of these things I love because I love progression. I love early stage companies. I've always loved entrepreneurship. And I feel like that's my superpower is early stage businesses, helping generate awareness, identifying, you know, who the founders are that are going to build the companies of the future, identifying cool brands that make you feel like you're part of something, brands that are really good at storytelling. So, you know, I try to align with those types of founders and those types of businesses so that, again, they're just like flow state conversations I'm having with everyone I'm doing business with.
I think that an opportune place to go from here, and I don't know if I've ever really heard you talk about it before. You're obviously established in the content creation space, like I also mentioned at the top, OG. How do you know where the algorithm, obviously you don't know where the algorithm is going, but how do you anticipate and adapt your content in the event of the algorithm changing and trend new trends coming? How do you position yourself to succeed?
Yeah, great questions. And these are conversations that I'm having with people close to me, but you're right. I haven't talked about this much on podcasts or on any social media platforms, but the algorithm is changing. I mean, now the hook is so important. Like, you need to instantly captivate someone's interest because so many people are creating content. So I put a lot of thought into what is a hook that is going to be, you know, shareable, captivating. People are going to want to save it because the algorithm wants people inside the app. If you can do a good job of getting people into the app and keeping people in the app, then Instagram is going to favor that content. That's why controversial content works so well. I'm not controversial. I don't want to be conflicting with all these people and, you know, trying to cancel people. But that's why that content does really well, is because people are sharing it. People are saving it. It's highly engaging. People are commenting on it. So I do think through those things when I'm posting content, because I want, you know, I want to, the brands I work with, I want to make sure that they're getting as many views as possible with the content I'm creating. So I have to think about kind of three things whenever I'm posting. Is it creating value for the brands I'm working with? Is it creating value for my audience? So that's often why I like sharing stories of my life that are unique to me. And then is it something that the Instagram algorithm is going to favor? You know, raw content is certainly performing much better than highly cinematic, high production content now. So, you know, I'm shooting pretty much everything on my iPhone with myself. Very rarely do I have any kind of, you know, photographer or videographer with me to shoot cinematic content. That doesn't seem to be performing well right now. But yeah, that hook is so important. So that's where a lot of my thought is on, you know, what is that instant captivating thing? And then what is a story I can tell, you know, from my life that is unique to me, that, you know, no one else has experienced in my life. You know, I don't like preaching. I don't like selling. I like telling stories. You know, I'll tell you, you know, what's worked for me, what hasn't worked for me, you know, interesting things that have happened throughout my life and, you know, tidbits that I do every single day, like meeting at least one new person every single day, you know, that compounds over time. You know, same with the compounding consistencies of exercise every single day, time blocking, so important. So I have these little kind of lifestyle design themes where I share stories around my life.
And I feel like that's also a nice segue. Thank you for sharing that, by the way, that outline for how you go about curating your content, especially in light of shifts and changes. Adaptability is so important. And it's obviously a skill that you've honed over time through failure, through your surviving chapter. And I think an opportune place to go from here would be, you've outlined Chasing Perfect Days, lifestyle design. These concepts may seem foreign to people outside of your community, my community, and maybe you're meeting someone for the first time. Maybe they hear concepts like frameworks, systems, processes. How do all of these concepts overlap, and how do you implement them into your day?
Well, time blocking is the most important one to me. Like, I do certain things at certain times. So for me, the mornings are built around something I'm not going to get to later in the day. That's generally when I have the least amount of messages coming in. You know, I get up pretty early, so no one else is awake in the house. you know, if there's something that I know is going to take 30 minutes or more, I try and do it first thing in the morning, because I know throughout the day, you know, it's just going to be lots of messages. It's going to be a fast paced day with calls and executing on those calls. So I try to do that first thing in the morning. And then I also plan out my day. I plan out my workouts for the day. I look to see who I have calls with and just kind of plan out structure for those calls and, you know, who I might want to introduce people to from those calls, what podcasts I'm on, do a little research on them. And then I head to the gym around 8 a.m., working out from about 8:30 until 10:30. And then I schedule all of my calls immediately after that. So from 10:30 until about 1:30, I'm generally either doing podcasts or brand calls. And that's because I know that's when I'm going to be the sharpest. My mind is going to be on fire from that first workout. And then 1:30, after about 3 hours of, you know, using lots of cognition, I know that I'm probably going to start to fade a bit. So I'll go off into the mountains and mountain bike or trail run. And I call that my moving meditation, where it's just kind of a reset to set me up for another work sprint. 3 to 5, another work block, very similar from 10:30 to 1:30. And then 5 until 7 is generally when I'm doing contrast therapy, community time, meeting new people. That's when I take in-person meetings, and I'm getting in my physical, mental, and emotional recovery during that time period. Doing contrast therapy, going from a hot sauna at about 200 degrees into an ice barrel at about 40 to 50 degrees, depending on the time of year and how much ice or snow we have in the ice barrel. And then a wind down routine from 7 until 9, dinner, and then I'll watch YouTube and just try and learn something in the evening before going to bed around 9 or 9:30. One of the big things is I avoid highly stimulating environments late at night to get good sleep. So I'm not going out to late night concerts. I'm not hosting big parties late at night. I want to wind down so that my mind isn't racing throughout the night. 6 a.m. until 7 p.m. is so important to me, and I don't want to affect those hours by doing something after 7 or 8 p.m. that affects my sleep.
What I appreciate about the way that you operate is that there's a focus and there's intentional design. We talked about it, lifestyle design, chasing perfect days. And now you've given some color to the frameworks and systems that you've been using for a while now. This is proven over time. Some of the systems that have, in my view, helped me gain more clarity that I've learned from you is, like you were saying, writing down all the times that you're in alignment, right? But I think the exercise that gave me the most value was, if you look at your perfect day and you write it out, you start to realize how many of those things you can actually do intentionally on a daily basis, right? Whether it's that cup of coffee, that workout, that TV show, or the time you go to sleep, the people you surround yourself with, how many of the things are actually within your control that you could design intentionally into your day? And that is probably, as a lifestyle entrepreneur, creator, however anyone wants to categorize Eric Hinman, which I would probably say it's pretty difficult to put you in one bucket. That has been one of the greatest additions to the quality of my life that I can candidly say, like, thank you, man. Thank you. So as we kind of shift gears, reading is also a very important pillar in the systems and processes that you implement on a day-to-day. What are you reading now?
Yeah. So I watch a lot of podcasts and listen to a lot of podcasts. That's been more my jam the last couple of years. My First Million, I've really been enjoying. I actually just met Sam Parr, who's so one of cool. The hosts of the podcast in Austin at Squatch at the in a sauna, of course. So I really like their podcast. I mean, the last couple of years for me, I've really stepped back into the building of businesses phase. And, you know, prior to that, I was much more into, you know, training for CrossFit, training for endurance, and just exploring Colorado. But these last 2 to 4 years, I've really stepped back into, you know, investing in brands and helping others build businesses and kind of building my own business side by side along with the brands I work with. with. So their podcast I've really enjoyed lately. You know, lots of incredible entrepreneurs they interview. They kind of break down companies and how the companies grew to where they are. So I've been enjoying their podcast a lot. The other podcasts I listen to are Chris Williamson. He's obviously really come on the scene in Austin. He has some really good guests. I certainly tune into Huberman here and there, just to hear his takes on various things that I've implemented into my life. It's just kind of cool understanding some of the science behind it, because I always consider myself just a one-man scientist of, like, I'll try things for a bit and see if it works for me. And if it does, I'll keep doing it. If it doesn't, then I don't keep doing it and I'll shift to something else. And then, you know, I'll just pick and choose, like, people I'm really interested in, you know, maybe someone who I'm about to meet or, you know, just met. I'll search them and look for podcasts they've been on and learn stuff about them. I feel like Nick Bear is an incredible person to listen to, just from, you know, his messages around the structure and compounding consistencies, and, you know, how he just seems to put blinders on for whatever he is doing at the moment. You know, if it's running a 240 marathon, that's what he's training for. You know, he's not dabbling in other things. He's not doing high rocks races. He's, like, really focused on that, and he follows a training protocol and he executes upon it. So I love people that do that are able to, you know, just realize that in order to succeed, you need to eliminate distractions. It's really not what you're saying yes to, it's what you're saying no to. And realizing that, you know, we all are going to write many chapters in life, and it's best to focus on one chapter at a time instead of writing multiple chapters at the same time.
I think that's also, I agree wholeheartedly that. So I guess you're not reading anything right now. Your content consumption is really based around key content creators like Nick Bear, Huberman, Chris Williamson. A lot of the same inputs I have, honestly. And it's interesting, the takeaways, right? Like, when I listen to Chris Williamson, there is specific guests that he'll have on that make a difference in my day-to-day. Most recently, Tim Kennedy. Just put out. I felt that was a very powerful episode and very relevant. But sometimes if he's going to put on like a dating coach, that's not as relevant to me. And I'm not really about the falling in love scene right now. It's more about, like, how can I actionably improve the quality of my life and also have this keen awareness around where society is at. And a guest like that, who is very controversial, to your point, is a very informative source. And then you also have the refined sources like Nick Bear, Andrew Huberman. Inputs and outputs are extremely key, right? Focusing on what we can control. What are some of the other inputs that you're consuming right now that are helping you stay at this level of consciousness, awareness, and productivity that we all know you're at?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest level of input is the conversations I'm having with people. That's where I get the majority of my knowledge. So, you know, I'm careful with who I surround myself with. You know, I have kind of my inner circle here in Colorado and same in Austin that I'm spending a lot of my time with. And then I'm always open to meeting new people too. And, you know, I've been fortunate that my social media has been built around just my content and my lifestyle. It wasn't built around fame or being on TV or, you know, attracting an audience through just like a large platform. It was literally just from sharing my life and my content. So, you know, the majority of the people that are reaching out to me are really into health and wellness. They're really into entrepreneurship. They're really into high performance lifestyle. They're really into figuring out how to design this conscious lifestyle of perfect days. So, you know, the people that reach out to me that want to meet up, they're generally people I want to meet up with. So that's the majority of my input, is literally just conversations I'm having with people. And I mean, I would say the big intention around that is these contrast therapy sessions. You know, people are always coming over to our house to do contrast therapy. And that's where I've had some of the best conversations of my life, are in a sauna. Effect of multiple things happening at the same time. The heat, narrowing your aperture, because it's kind of putting you in a fight or flight mode. So, you know, you're super focused, you get vulnerable really, really quick. It's almost like having, you know, three drinks at a bar, but with no consequences. And you're in this hot, small room where your phone is going to overheat. So you're not bombarded with any distractions. You're just captive and intentional with the people that you're with in that sauna. So that's where the majority of these deep conversations are happening. And that's where I schedule the majority majority of my in-person meetings are in saunas, and I found that's where I have the best conversations. So yeah, the majority of the conversations I have are in person, or, you know, with people on social media. Like, I always have people reaching out, and, you know, I love doing podcasts. I love chatting with people in the wellness space. So I'm constantly chatting with founders of wellness brands and investors in wellness brands. And, you know, honestly, through those conversations, I get all of the information I could possibly want. You know, I'm not tuning into the news. I'm not tuning into negativity, you know, sometimes to a fault. Like, I don't really know what's going on in the world at most times unless someone told me about it. But I don't watch the news. I don't watch TV. I like in-person conversations.
That presence of mind is definitely also a very valuable habit. Kind of shifting gears, I was interviewing Brian Mazza recently. He was talking about how each of you were all about brand building and mm-hmm. from a partnership, a camaraderie, all the different elements. I got his take on personal branding. You alluded to it earlier. I think we're kind of past the 101 stage of personal branding. People kind of know, like, your brand is a reputation, the things that you like, feel, and do, the personal stories you experience. You kind of alluded to some of the ways you go about it. And we also talked about the shifting landscape. I'm curious, though, for the intermediate to advanced creators that are taking another step, myself included, I'm asking the question selfishly. Maybe you could share some insight into how we can elevate the quality of our personal brands.
I mean, being a thought leader, picking a theme and running with it, thinking of yourself as the Kardashians. You know, the Kardashians created something special with their reality TV show. You knew exactly what you were going to get every single time, but there was this element of surprise of, like, what are they going to be doing this time? You know, and that's a lot of social media, is like, you want to be known for something. Many of the accounts I follow, I know exactly what I'm getting from it. My buddy Cold Plunge Cam, like, I know that his whole account is built around cold exposure and how it's benefited his mental health journey. My friend Evan Slaughter, Fit to Serve, I consider him the funniest man on the internet. His whole account is around, you know, making fun of himself for, you know, unfortunately getting somewhat out of weight. And now he's on this journey of getting fit again. And he just kind of makes fun of himself. And his content is so funny. Like, he's who I go to for a laugh each day. So, like, being known for something is so important, being a thought leader in a certain space. And then, you know, picking a theme and picking an emotion that you want to run with. Do you want to make people laugh? Do you want to be controversial? Do you want to inspire people? Like, figuring out what that is for you, and what is just an authentic extension of you. I think that's super important. Like, I'm pretty funny, but I'm probably much better at inspiring people. So I generally run with the inspiration theme, even though I would love to throw in some funny stuff. It's not really what, you know, is the perfect extension of me. You know, I know that my journey is the most unique thing to me, of where I was in my late 20s and where I am now in my 40s. So, you know, I want everything I put out to be an extension of you know, what journey I've gone through and who I am and what I did. So I think that's super important. And then obviously most of us are trying to figure out a way to build a business around this. So in order to build a business around it, you need to figure out what type of value do you want to provide and who is paying for that value. So, you know, for me, like, I work with a lot of brands, so I provide a return on the brand's investment in me working with them. You know, many people come out with their own product or service, and, you know, that's obviously another way to sell to someone, is adding value through the products or services or content that you're providing. But yeah, figure out what that unique value is that you can monetize, and then who is your perfect customer? What is that product market fit that you want to have?
All value-driven insights, and I think definitely advice that I'm looking forward to taking to heart and acting on. There's a question that I pose to all my guests that I'm not going to pose to you as we round this thing out. If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now were to fly in and offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
So I've always been really, really obsessed with progress and building things. Yeah. you know, I've had periods of time where I backed off on that a bit, like from 2017 to 2019, I was really exploring Colorado and just having fun and just kind of being. I wasn't concerned about, you know, building anything around it or any kind of massive progression in something. And, you know, I feel like I've certainly fallen back into that trap of like every day, like I got to push the ball forward a little bit. I got to create a bunch of content. I want to, you know, have really good conversations and add values for the brands I'm working with. I want to progress in CrossFit. I want to get better at mountain biking. And, you know, I'm kind of in this progression hamster wheel again. So I think, you know, 10 years out, that person would tell me, like, just chill a little bit, like, be happy with just where you are and that view you're looking at and just being, as opposed to like continuing to build and continuing to build. And I think I'll get to a point where right now I feel like I have a tiger by the tail. And, you know, when you have a tiger by the tail, like, I always tell people, like, hang on for a bit, see where it takes you. And I kind of feel like I have that right now. You know, I don't want to look back and be like, shit, you know, I wish I did that. You know, I had this opportunity to go there and do that with this person, and, you know, I said no to it. So, you know, I'm just kind of holding the tiger by the tail right now. But eventually I want to slow down a bit again and, you know, get back to more just like being and just like taking in the view and taking in the sunrise and sunset. And, you know, I feel like I have this chapter ahead of me in Kauai. I love Kauai. And, you know, I feel like that's a place where I always feel like I can just be, and I'm just happy just looking at the view and the ocean and being in the mountains there. And it's so lush. So that's the place where I'll eventually go to slow down a bit and chill.
Please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
You bet. Best place is my Instagram, which is just my name, Eric Hinman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Eric Hinman, thank you so much for the time.